Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast, where we talk things after.
All things after.
Yes. I'm Andrew Main. That's Brian Brushwood.
Hey, buddy.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, yo,
yo.
So, gentlemen, we touched upon this a little bit in the last episode, and I am going to bring this up again because I think it's a point worth making. I sit here. I am maybe 90% done with a novel, and I've been probably 80% done with it for quite a while, and I got a lot of it done at first, and then I kind of reached this sort of got stuck in the mud. And I didn't know where, I wasn't as confused where to go. I mean, I have my little note cards, and I could say that I know that creatively I understand why I was slowing down, because often our enthusiasm, our energy level start to drop when we have challenges that are far more complicated than we appreciate. You know, we think like, oh, and this happens, but we don't have the answers. We may have things in front of us. We may have a map there, but we're looking at, you know, we've got to climb a mountain. We don't have rope, or we don't have the appropriate metaphor to fit the analogy. So I started thinking a bit about that. And then at night I go for walks, and I started listening to going back and saying, I want to listen to a bunch of these really old timey, like motivational books and stuff. And so,
yeah.
You know, picked up, you know, started listening to the original version of Think and Grow Rich, by Napoleon Hill, which it's an interesting book because it was part of that whole New Thought movement. And he was an interesting kind of odd guy in that on one hand, he put together this book with all of this sort of some sort of practical advice. But he's also a person that thinks that he was getting spiritual wisdom from a secret group of the masters that whispered to him, you know, like Shazam, you know.
Wow.
And so it goes into a weird place, but there is this the one point of that and one point of other sort of things that I do think is really critical. I do think is really important. You know, I get all the time on Twitter like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And you do it. You just determine yourself that you're going to do something. And we talk about this before, you know, that people want this secret. They want this secret little thing, but you really just have to sit down and say, I will do this. And it can be hard in a creative endeavor because you say, oh, I need to write this chapter. And you sit there and it's like, well, if you told me to go out back with a sledgehammer and smash rocks, that's easy. Pick up sledgehammer, slash rocks. If it's a workout, I know, yeah, just go effing work out. When you're trying to do something creative and you're telling yourself, do it, it's a little more complicated.
Well, especially because, I mean, I don't know if the metaphor holds up, but it's like when you smash a rock, you know which one is the sledgehammer and which one is the rock. You know the motions, and you can tell immediately whether or not you smashed that rock. There's where there was one rock, now there's two. And then you just repeat. That is not so often the case with creative endeavors, because part of the nature of it is, you know, you open up, you know, your mind to, you know, the deep recesses, and you finish, let's say for a single sentence, you finish a string of words, and you think, is that the clearest way for me to state that? Is that taking me to the direction I need? Did that rock get split in half just then? I'm not really sure. And you know that there are times that you've entered, you know, the so-called flow state and just knocked it. You know you've experienced smashing rocks with that sledgehammer, but you don't know if you're there right now or if you're deluding yourself, you know?
Well, especially because you are very often tying something of yourself to creative work. You know, it's a lot messier on whether or not if you do it well, do you feel good about yourself? Do you feel bad about yourself? If you smash a rock, then there is, you know, a fairly limited stakes. I smashed a rock. Hooray. I didn't. Okay, whatever. Like, my life is either good or bad, you know, in very small degrees. Creative stuff, there are many different ways that this ends. You could work really hard and be disappointed. You could work really hard and feel really good. You could work kind of hard and feel really good or really disappointed. There's not one way to do it. And even at the highest level, you hear people saying, yeah, you want to know what? I thought this one kind of sucked, and it turns out everybody loves it. or I thought this one, I worked, I slaved. This was my one true, this is my life's work. And I released it and I showed it to people and everybody yawned and nobody got it. You know, like there's so many ways that you can carve it, that very often you have to find where you are, almost where your own barometer is, more so than any kind of universal truth on it.
I think that if you get that far, that's great. For a lot of people, they never get that far. You know, I've been sitting here. I started a book last month, you know, the goal of finishing by my birthday, and I didn't finish. I wrote as many words as I planned to write by my birthday, but it turned out it's a bigger book than I expected. So I'm not like, not beating myself up too much, because I'm like, oh, I had this expectation and I didn't realize it was a bigger project than I did. But then I started to get very, very slow in what I was doing. You know, Justin and I talked, you know, on the phone about this, and, you know, my thing that I want to do after I finish this is just sort of write down my observations of when did I write, why did I write, when did I stop, and why did I stop? And it's become apparent to me that a lot of times the places I stop are, I have a plan on paper, but something doesn't gel with me. It doesn't feel like it's actually the story is where it needs to go. And I feel a little bit uncomfortable about doing it. And I think that's the thing that I have to do. The thing that helped me through is I had to stop and say, where does this need to be right now? Where does the story need to be? How do I get to where it needs to be? And throw out what I was looking at and say, okay, that answers it, but it's not, I don't try to find the perfect way. I just try to find a good way. And I said, you know what? I'm not comfortable because my character's in this situation and I want this thing to happen, but I think that from his arc, I need to have X, Y, and Z occur. And I think that you have to just sort of break it down. You have to say, what would an outcome look like? You know, what would satisfy this side of the equation? It would be like, he would be here, he would be feeling this, and this would do that. How do I get from here to there? And, you know, my easiest advice to people often is, write the most interesting thing you can have. You know, what's the most interesting thing that can happen right now? If you're at a point where it's boring or weird or whatever, you're just not happy, what's the most interesting thing that can happen, and then move forward? But at the end of the day, that only happens when you decide to think about it. And the more time I spent sitting in front of my TV watching ESPN 30 for 30s and doing anything except solving the problem wasn't getting solved. And I probably really needed to take my brain away from everything. To be honest, I probably really needed to stop. That being said, is sometimes people use as an excuse to then say, maybe this story wasn't right for me to begin with. And that is the biggest mistake.
So that's, I think that's really where the issue lies, is when you force yourself to do things, and this is for anything, breaking rocks, working out, being creative, there is an element of subjugation of yourself that needs to take place. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to force myself to do that, and I am going to tamp down what would normally pop up in my head that would distract me or bring me away from this single pursuit. When you do that a lot, the next level to that, the next boss is, where is the healthy reprieve, and where is I'm wasting my time and I'm distracting and I'm further complicating this problem unnecessarily? Because if you lock in and you're really good at getting stuff done, there is such a thing as burnout. There is such a thing of a degradation of quality when you're burning yourself too hard on it. You can get better work if you focus and know yourself better. But that's been something that for me has been tremendously difficult. It's hard to know whether or not, hey, is this story good? Hey, is this me telling myself that I should scrap it and do it again? You know, is this me telling myself that I just need to take a few hours off so I can look at it in a different way?
Yeah. I don't know. To me, I have found that oftentimes the moments that I'm most effective and get the most work done are the ones in which my schedule is so full, there's no other opportunity, where it's like, you understand that either you're going to do whatever this thing is in the next hour, or it's never going to get done at all, or it certainly won't get done this week because you're about to get on a plane and go to whatever. In fact, going back to, you know, old school motivational stuff, Brian Tracy in one of his books said that, you know, think about the way you act the day before you're about to leave on a week-long vacation. Think about how much business you get done, and think about what your life would be like if you acted like that every single day. If you could enter that, okay, we got to get this done, I don't have time. You know, it's like, that's good enough. That fulfills my obligation. We can move on to the next thing. because that's that whole the perfect is the enemy of the good thing, where it's like it turns out that just being good is good enough a lot of times, and we find excuses to obsess over little things.
Live your life like it's the day before the last day of your life.
Yeah, right?
Start getting everything. Like, live your day like it's the last. Like, what, sitting around eating Cherry Garcia, calling up every girl I know to see if she wants to hook up? Like, every day? Like,
Yeah, I mean, I think that no matter what, and this is something that I've found, because I've got a million things that I got to do between now and September, I've taken.
Well, happens in September?
Well, you know,
The end of his life as a single bachelor.
Well, between now and then, it's like, you know, I got the card game, which is going to launch a Kickstarter in early August. The one man show, the two conventions for which we're doing programming for, and then of course the wedding, which is part of, you know, convention programming in September. And, you know, I'm at the point now where it's like all of my weekends are booked. Oh, and in between there, you know, we have to do, you know, stuff that, like, not, and then boo-hoo me. Like, I have to go to, like, my bachelor party and everything, which is, like awesome. And it's going to be super fun. But it's also time that I don't have to do the other things. And it's one of those things that I've taken to trying to schedule out my entire day and understand I'm not going to beat myself up if I don't hit everything. And it's something that I don't like to do. I have always avoided doing. I've always been more like a, you know, even at my most productive, a very bohemian, like, hey man, I just got a to-do list and I'm going to knock out as much as I can. Like, and I've found that my internal discipline is enough to get shit done, but I can't. I mean, like, now I feel like I need to put things into more of a, like, well, why aren't I doing this right now? Why can't this get done at this moment? At 4 o'clock tomorrow, I need to do this, and by 5 o'clock, I need to do this. And they would normally, and they're little things like book my hotels for stuff like that, stuff that would just be on a to-do list, but now I assign a time to it just because I can't. I'm running out of time to push stuff back to, you know, it's hard because on one level it does lead to fatigue. Like, it is one of those things where you can only live so many days. Like, it's your last day before vacation before you're like I called you, Brian, where I was just like, I was just depleted.
You're just done. Like, yeah, your bank account was empty, and I've been there, man. I mean, it's like especially last year, you know, doing the TV project and stuff. It turns out that you know, saying yes to everything often finds you in that live wire, electrical, white hot, getting a bunch of stuff done. But it also can, you know, when it's on a long enough time frame, you're looking at everything being booked out every second of your life, no free time for 6 months straight. It has a different effect. It has this crushing, like, man, I'm never going to get to do nothing.
The pressures of being a husband and father too.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that.
You know, that's I look at all the things I'm not getting done, and I the number of times I have to get up with an alarm clock, you know, is
5. That's the number of times total.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I try to think, like, yeah, maybe in the last month, maybe 2 times I've had to set an alarm or something, you know.
By the way, you would think, you know, I would be able to say, like, oh, it must be nice or whatever. But it's like, in many ways, ever since, you know, the Patreons have done so well on the independent podcast, I haven't had to tour anymore. Ever since the TV show and the online store is growing really well, I haven't, you know, I in many ways am entering the same clubhouse with you, Andrew. But I actually find that my anxiety is in some ways increased, because whereas before, when you're on a schedule, you knew when you were on and when you were off. You knew, you know, my job is to get to the gate. Hey, I have 5 minutes to kill. I'm going to guilt-free play this little video game because there's nothing else on the planet I'm supposed to do. Whereas being home and having a relaxed schedule, it's the reverse. You constantly, always feel like there's something you ought to be doing for your creative.
You see why I don't play video games now?
Yeah, dude, I don't blame you, man. Because, well, and what's funny is, like, I've gotten to the point now where it's like I feel guilty even answering tweets. It's like the moment I fire up TweetDeck, there's part of my brain that's like, oh, this is important community management. You're reaching out to your fans. You're keeping your fan base mobilized. And another part of me is like, liar. You're doing that because you don't want to answer those emails. And it's like, shut up. I'm doing work. And I'm like, no, you're not. And it's like, ah. And it's like that for everything.
Well, yeah, for you, I mean, Brian, you are somebody that has always, I'm not inside your bread, inside your brain, so I can't say that you are most effective in a regimented system, but I know from talking to you that you thirst for them. Like, yeah. You know, when you want to get in shape, you're like, oh, well, I really hope that this TV deal comes through because then I will have a deadline to get in shape by. Yes. You know, like your brain is smart enough to talk yourself out of self-discipline. And that I think has been your journey is learning to uncut those wires that like, you know, allow you to bypass. No, idiot, you're doing it now and you're doing
which is happening right now, by the way, ever since we did the triathlon, which turned out to be a duathlon because of the storms. But once that was finished, it's, you know, the lizard part of my brain's like, all right. So I guess it's some cheeseburgers and some taking her easy for a while. And logic brain is like, well, I'm looking at the schedule and I can't really come up with a reason why that shouldn't be the case. And so here we are. And so it's like, I'm actually, you know, smart brain is casting its eyes around looking for some excuse to try to get lizard brain back scared and working out again.
I can relate to that. I've said this before, but like the most dangerous lesson I learned once I hired a trainer to put together a program for me is I saw how much I could get done in 5 weeks.
Okay. You know, in 3 weeks. Well, and that's the other thing, right? And that was the same thing when I decided I was going to do Penn & Teller's Fool Us. You know, I lost 4 or 6 pounds in like 6 weeks or something, you know, and it was just a matter, you know, and during that time it was a lot of fun and I worked really hard and it's like, and then the moment it was over, I was like, yeah, so cheeseburger time again, right? It's like, yeah.
That's skipping lunch for me.
What's that? Oh, skip.
To lose 4 pounds, it's like don't eat lunch.
And then, I'm a tiny, tiny man. It's like,
part of me is like, yeah, whatever. You know, like, because I've just decided I want to start running. And then I just like plugged it into my head. I'm like, yeah, idiot, you're running now because your wedding's in like 2 months and you don't want to be as fat as you've ever been for your wedding.
No, I've always loved running. I just finally have got time. I finally have time to run. Look at me.
And that's the thing, because I have less than no time. I have the littlest amount of time ever, and yet that's like now I'm in a situation where I'm like, oh, look, hey, look, it's now I've run enough and I've stick to a program, and now I'm getting to a point where I can do, you know, 4 or 5 miles without it killing me, you know, like every day. And it's like, that's what you need to do and you want to do. And it takes time and it takes effort. And, you know, creatively, this is a lot of the same stuff, is that it's not, creativity is very oftentimes, in my opinion, not about the burst. It's about the refuel and the reburst let's keep going. Let's understand it's a process. Let's understand that like all the disappointment and everything comes with it. And then we keep doing it because that's the only way, you know, it's like, why do we fall down, Bruce? So we can get back up. Also, yep. I just got shot. I'm Batman's dad.
Gentlemen, do we have any picks? Any recommendations?
You know what? Actually, you opened the door to at some point, maybe we'll queue it up for next week. I have a very conflicted feeling about motivational books and audiobooks and stage programs or whatever.
Open it up. Open that door.
Well, I mean, I don't know that we have time to really explore. It's like there's part of me that recognizes like so much of that world is just pseudoscience and just total hokum and nonsense and wishing makes it true and the secret movie and all that crap. And yet I absolutely attribute a significant portion of whatever, you know, entrepreneurial success I've gotten from the frame of mind that listening to those kind of programs put me in. And so I will say, you know, reading, you know what, here's a simple one. Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy is my pick. It's a very small book. I think it's less than 100 pages long. Let me type in Eat That Frog. Eat That Frog. And it speaks in very plain language about, you know, ways to stop procrastinating and get stuff done. And like, you know, little bits like when you wake up in the morning, You should eat the biggest, most ugly frog on your plate because there ain't nothing else to do. Just get started and go. And, you know, what I love about Brian Tracy's writing is even when he's wrong, it feels so right because there is no gray in his writings. He says, all successful people do this. All unsuccessful people do that. And it's like when you hear, you know, it's kind of like grandpa advice in that regard. He's like, all successful people make lists. All unsuccessful people don't. And, you know, whether that, you know, obviously that can't be true. But it's great to hear those words spoken in that kind of flat narrative to get you to get off your butt and make some stuff happen.
Yeah, the danger in many of these things is that, you know, we go to these things when we're looking for certainty. You know, we're looking for somebody to tell us what to do. And then there are people who will step forward with a tremendous amount of certainty in that stuff. Then you find out that there's a lot of con artists and PR people who are just deluded, who do have some helpful things to say and then a lot of not. Like, Think and Grow Rich. Like, I don't know, because like I didn't really, because like, oh, I want to be rich. Like, no, I want to be, I'm looking like, man, I want to be motivated right now. I want to figure out why I'm not doing this. And then he starts talking and like, think about a sum of money that you want. Think about, and I'm like, that's a thing I don't think about, you know, I don't, you
well,
know.
That's also not what motivates you, right? I mean, you.
No.
So in that regard, you know, there's a bit of a different angle, but yeah. And keep in mind, out of everyone who does the self-help motivational stuff, I really like Brian Tracy's writing the most. However, having said that, you know, he is also the kind of person, and I kind of love how he handled this. One of the old tropes was the old Harvard study that said, you know, do you have a set of written goals? And only 2% did. And they followed up with them all later. And the 2% that had written goals when they graduated Harvard or whatever were worth more than the rest combined. And it turns out that that was all just urban legend. It was fantasy and it wasn't true. And that chestnut was one that Brian Tracy said a lot. And upon being asked about it and being confronted with the evidence that it didn't exist, he simply replied, well, if it's not true, it should be. Yeah, and like the end of discussion. I kind of adored that.
I went to years ago, I was taking some night school classes, and there was somebody gave me a flyer, and it was some sort of motivational talk or something
test,
like that.
With like some tech to get ahead in life.
What's that?
I would say I was making personality test Scientology jokes. Sorry.
No. It was some sort of motivational thing. And we go into this room on the campus, and there's this video. We watch some guy talk, and young guy, and I watch him tell a Zig Ziglar story as if it was his own. You know, yeah. I watch him do a couple stories that were he was relating their own, and there was, you know, a little bit of a break, and I talked to one of these organizers. You know, that's a Zig. It was a video we were watching this thing. I said, "That's a Zig Ziglar story." So what do you mean? He says, "Yeah, no, that didn't happen to him. Or if it did, you know, it's kind of weird that he's using a story that's like 40 years old." And he says, "Well, you know, sometimes these guys they share them and stuff like that." Like, well, he lied to you. I said, "You know, he lied to you about this. You know, this is a lie. This is a place where, you know, somebody's talking about honesty and ethics and all this sort of stuff. He used this story that was not his own. It was another speaker. And this guy was a wannabe kind of thing. And then my favorite thing was this guy's his catchphrase was TNT, today, not tomorrow. Right. So he's like, today, not tomorrow. He says, you got to make these pledges to do this sort of stuff. So what I want you to do tonight at midnight, I want you to make a pledge that you're going to do X. I'm like, well, wait.
Isn't that tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow. <You know? laughs> And then, but I watched every those the room is they were enraptured with the guy's energy and the guy's dedication. They were enraptured because this was a guy because he was at the front of everybody else and he was the one talking, and because he had his life more together than they did, they were into this, you know. And that's just, you know. And I remember, you know, I saw another guy that was doing, you know, some course, you know, he was at another college, and he, you know, the university president loved this guy and spoke highly of him. And his whole thing was like, he has a thing was called the quantum mind. And I'm like, well, you know what quantum means?
Quantum is literally the lowest energy in the universe. It is the amount of energy required to move an electron from one orbit to another.
The most minimal thing you can. And so it's like saying small brain or whatever, yeah. You know? And I'm like, it was just, I'm like, I don't think this is a place for me. You're not really, you know, I mean, it was like, I remember talking, I went and did a, you know, a Scientology tour once, you know. And,
did you
and,
really?
Oh yeah, I've done
I'm OT4.
I had you know, this guy explaining to me, like, they put me in the e-meter, all that sort of stuff, you know, and this guy's telling me, he says, well, you know, thoughts have mass. I'm like, well, wait a second. If you weighed me right now and I thought about something very, very large, you could tell the difference as you weighed me. And again, this guy's, you know, I'm sure Scientologists would say, no, he's not off script. He wasn't speaking from Scientology, whatever. I'm sure he wasn't, whatever. But I'm like, wait, my weight would increase. He goes, yeah, I guess so. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah.
Well, and what's funny is oftentimes I could be forgiving of some of the language they use because, you know, let's say they'll say something like, thoughts have mass and mass times velocity equals momentum. You want momentum in your life, go. And it's like, you know, I would hear something like that and I would think like, okay, this is, you know, not factually true. This is a useful metaphor to, you know, to conjure in your mind so that you get pumped up about doing it and you feel as if you're a freight train moving forward.
That wasn't the case though. He said it had, and I'm like, well, you mean like literally it has mass, like a weight. Like,
and that was Scientology, right?
Yeah. Like, I said, so if I thought of like the Titanic, would I have but he just goes, man, I never thought about that. And I'm like, what do you mean you never thought about that? You tell this to people all day long and you haven't thought about what these words mean.
But to be honest, that's the nature of black box thinking. Like, to him, Scientology is a black box construct. All he knows is he does the things and then he feels good. And it doesn't really matter to question the precepts underneath. And there's a number of things.
But that's the step when you got to stop and say to yourself, like, think about what things mean.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, so I guess what I would say in general with that, I mean, the way I take motivational stuff, I tend to find it not particularly helpful for me because I am at times probably unnecessarily oppositionally defiant to people telling me how to, like, live my life.
You can achieve anything you want. He's like, oh, I can? Well, screw you. I'll show you. I'm going to show you.
Like, well, then why aren't you emperor? Why aren't you the emperor of the world if you can do whatever you want? Huh? But I will say this, that there's, and this will lead into my pick, that, that there are little that, like, I don't think of motivational books or speeches or stuff like that. I think a lot of them are frauds. Andrew makes a point. I saw once, and I think I talked to Brian about it right afterward, but like, I was at a thing for the Go Game and this guy was doing a motivational speech, about like, it was more business focused on like customer service and stuff like that. And he's telling all these stories, but he's telling stories because he had stand up written all over him. He looked like a stand up that, you know, realized that stand up wasn't as lucrative as motivational speaking. So he's telling very stand up style, first person narrative stories. And I'm like, no, none of these happened to you. Like, you made all of these up. These are all fake stories. It is impossible that these happen in this way. Like, you are not the most interesting man in the world. You have embellished at the very least all of these, and I will guarantee 50% of them are fake. And so that bothered me. But all that being said, you are the only thing that matters. The benefit, I think, in a lot of these are that you can grease the skids just a little bit, if even just a little bit. It ain't going to provide the momentum. It's not going to be the secret trick to get your wheel spinning. But if anything that comes out of that, even if you think that that person is an absolute fraud, although don't give them your money, please, for God's sakes. If anything just gets that wheel turning just a little bit and then you apply your own motivation and momentum to kind of keep things going, I think that there is a benefit. And that leads me to my pick, which is something I talked about running and I'm trying to get back into it, and something that I have done is both times that I've really gotten into running, I've done a couch to 5K program. Now, the first time, I had no background in running, and I very much needed the interval training of, like, you know, run 30 seconds, walk 5.5 minutes, you know, and I'm like, initially I look at it, and I'm like, oh, come on, whatever. Like, I'm a true man. I can, you know, running for 30 seconds, whatever. And I got back to my room wheezing, you know. This time, I at least had a sense of it. I knew what it was. And even though I ran, you know, I was using the same, effectively the same Couch to 5K program. It was a Couch to 5K app this time. I would just run after I was done for the rest of the time. I would just run back to my house. And so I would, you know, I'd wind up running a 5K pretty much from the beginning, but it gave me the kind of perspective of like, hey, listen, if I get back and I'm not destroyed every day, that's fine. Because at this early stage, I want to do it every single day. And so this was something that gave me just a little grease on the skids to kind of keep it going. And now I've interval trained enough to where I, you know, now in the program, it's just walk 5 minutes, effectively run for 30 minutes, which is there. It's leading it up to 30 minutes. It's given me that ability. And that was something where it's like, I did something that I probably looked at and said, objectively, I can run a 5K now. You know, I don't need that program. It's probably underpowered for me, but it was what I needed. And it gave me, something that is of now great benefit.
So the specific pick is the app or is there a book?
The app is, I think it's just called Couch to 5K. There are a million different versions of it, but this one is by Active. It's not complicated. It really just requires that you have your headphones plugged in and you leave your ringer not on silent. This one, and to be honest, there's like 20 of them that are knockoffs in the App Store. I don't know if I bought a knockoff. I don't know if I bought the real one. Any of them are effectively, they're all basically the same. They're all just interval training that kind of slowly go up. So, you don't even need the app. Like you can just download a program and just time it on your phone yourself if you want. That's what I did the first time.
Right on.
I'm looking at active.com. Cool. You know, I think that the secret to all these sort of things is that there is none. You have to keep trying different things, and things work for a while, and then you have to change up. You know, it's like working out, you know.
Man, I guess that's the one of the weirdest parts is you get to a certain age and you realize that not only is the method to get to your goal Dumbo's magic feather. It's just, you know, whatever it takes to get you to try flying. But then you get there and then you realize that the goal itself is a mirage and that to take from the infinite wisdom of Chet Page, it's the journey, right? Is what it's all about.
Journey is the reward.
You have a pick, Andrew?
My pick is going to be, a book we've pitched before, we talked about before, that's a really great book that sort of explains a lot of this is Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, Daniel Kahneman book.
Yeah, you know, dude, that's fantastic.
Probably one of the premier researchers ever on how the brain thinks. He's one of the most cited people. You know, his research, and it is just a really, really great overview of just the, it's a big, dense book. And I'm going to, confession time, I'm still working my way through it.
Oh, really?
You know, it's huge, but it's just a great, you know, overview of like just how we think. And, you know, when you start trying to figure out why things work, why things don't work, you begin to understand that, you know, what we've been learning about how we function. I think the thing that, one of the examples that was most helpful for me, and it wasn't from here, but it was another researcher talking about willpower, and I've mentioned this before, but it was just, it's one thing to say, I'm going to go do something and go do it. It's another thing when you're trying to diet and you're in a room and there's a box of donuts and you keep saying to yourself, I'm not going to eat them. I'm not going to eat them. I'm not going to eat them. And your brain runs out of no juice. And yep. When you're out of no juice, all you have is yes.
Yeah, well, which is funny because in the case of like if you're on a diet, you end up saying yes anyway, and you just undercut. You have all the detriment as if you had just walked into the room and said, "Cool, donuts," and none of the benefit. Like you suffered all that time for nothing.
Yeah, I've told you, like my strategy on that stuff is like I don't tell myself no. I just say like, "Oh yeah, we'll just eat an apple first."
Yeah,
you know, and then I'll eat the apple. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not so hungry for the donut now. And that's the thing is like, don't, if you get caught up in the, no, I'm going to resist. I'm going to have willpower.
Right.
You're going to cave. I mean, that's how they brainwash you. You know, that's how you just get somebody to get so tired. They lose their resistance to everything. And we do this to ourselves. We just give up where if you can just tell yourself, hey, I can have that, but let me have this other thing first. And then let me satisfy that lower, the bodily need. And then the brain's going to focus on something else.
Dude, somebody strengths says that, somebody had the exact same, the Hollywood Reporter apparently had the exact same experience.
Mass to it. And so when somebody thinks of something that has potentially some significance.
Person opposite.
And thought actually has weight or mass to it. And so when somebody thinks of something that has potentially some significance
thought
or upset.
Thought has a weight or a mass to it. Yeah. That's a theory, though, isn't it?
That's how we operate in Scientology.
And, that's not been proven in science, has it? Thought doesn't have weight and mass in science.
This is a religion, it's not a science.
No, that's what I mean. Yeah. Supposing that thought doesn't have a weight or a mass, then that would render this machine useless.
Yeah, okay. What's the point?
He's like, cool story, bro.
I guess it wasn't just one guy saying this.
Barely it's in the script.
Unless it's the same guy.
Yeah, that was he was very earnest and sincere.
Wow.
And this is the thing that they found out, you know, like, oh, you're a magician. Like, Ron Hubbard, like, met a Chinese magician. He started describing all these magic and miracles he could do. I'm like, that sounds amazing.
All right. Like, I could do this all night, but I got to start packing.
I bought my tickets for the 5:30 showing of Jurassic World.
Good on you, sir. I'm jelly.
Check the thermostat before you go. Go ahead and call him in.
Yeah,
I know. I'm going to call it on that. And I get to come home from that and go watch Final Game of Thrones.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man, this is it for the season?
I heard some speculation.
Nope. Don't say nothing then. I don't want to hear nothing.
Very excited about it.
Okay.
All right. I mean, like story speculation or like.
Save it for the after show, our new Game of Thrones podcast.
No, I'm not talking spoilers. I just meant like, can they give us another show in that universe, please?
It's just
shut your mouth. Games. All right.
Not talking. Hey guys, it's been after.
Yay!
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.